So we'll read from 27th chapter of the Krishna book, which is the prayers of Indra after he was humbled by Krishna in Vrindavan. When Krishna saved the inhabitants of Vrindavan from the wrath of Indra by lifting Govardhan Hill, a Surabhi cow from Goloka Vrindavan, as well as King Indra from the heavenly planet, appeared before him. Does anyone know why Indra bore a Surabhi cow with him?
To facilitate his being forgiven by them.
Yes. Because Krishna is Go Brahmana Hitaya Cha. He's very dear. He loves the cows and the Brahmanas. So Indra thought Krishna is very angry. So if I go to beg Krishna for forgiveness, he will not look at me, but when he sees the cow, his heart will be softened, and then I will come and ask for forgiveness. Indra, the king of heaven, was conscious of his offense before Krishna. Therefore, he stealthily appeared before him from a secluded place. He immediately fell down at the lotus feet of Krishna, although his own crown was dazzling like sunshine. Indra knew about the exalted position of Krishna because Krishna is the master of Indra. But he could not believe that Krishna would come down and live in Vrindavan among the cowherd men. When Krishna defied the authority of Indra, Indra became angry because he thought that he was the all-in-all within this universe and that no one was as powerful as he. But after this incident, his false puffed up prestige was destroyed. Being conscious of his subordinate position, he appeared before Krishna with folded hands and began to offer the following prayers. So Indra is the representation of pride. In the Christian tradition, it's said that pride cometh before
fall.
Therefore, in spiritual life, there's no room for pride. One devotee used to say to me, if you're proud, you can't lust, you can't learn, and you can't love. If you're proud, you can't lust because you will definitely commit offenses. Offenses to others, offenses to Krishna, offenses to the holy name. Definitely you will commit offenses because pride means you become very insensitive towards others. Therefore, one who is proud, they will never be able to last in spiritual life. But somehow or other, if a proud person slips through and manages to last, they'll never be able to learn. Because learning only happens when there is humility. If there's no humility, there is no learning. So a proud person can't learn. But somehow or other, if a proud person even manages to last and even manages to learn things, the ultimate thing is they will not be able to love. Because love means selflessness. There's no love without selflessness. But when you're proud, you're self-absorbed, you're selfish, you're self-centered. And therefore, you will never be able to serve others. You will never be able to serve Vaishnavas. You will never be able to serve Krishna selflessly. And if you're not able to serve selflessly, how will you awaken love? So Indra represents pride, and Krishna expertly removes the pride of his devotees. And I'll say one more thing. That sometimes the strength that Krishna gives us in our life can become our biggest weakness. And also sometimes your biggest weakness in life can become your biggest strength in spiritual life. I'll explain what I mean. Indra, by Krishna's grace, had so much power, so much influence, so much strength. But because his strength made him proud, his biggest strength became his biggest weakness. But if a devotee has a weakness in spiritual life, but that weakness helps them to become humble, that weakness helps them to become dependent on Krishna, that weakness helps them to cry out to Krishna for Krishna's help, then that weakness becomes their biggest strength. And so Indra represents how your biggest strength can become your biggest weakness. But we learn that our biggest weakness can also become our biggest strength. Before I carry on, anyone like to make any comments?
Thank you. In the 10th canto, Shukadeva is saying, quote that verse, Tejiyasan, forgetting her goals. Tejiyasan meaning, no matter how much delikas perform sin, Tejiyasan no longer. Their piety is so great that they burn out what had to sin and make perform. On one side, no way. Of course, you're right there. They are obviously initial adapters, you could say. But at the same time, she begs me to say that they're so biased that it doesn't alter. Just see the appearance, it doesn't alter their position.
Yes. Yeah, this is a very nice point. And it's very important to bear in mind that when we talk about Indra and Indra making a mistake, Indra becoming overcome by pride, ultimately we know that this is not just an ordinary person and this is not an ordinary incident. But this is ultimately also happening in Krishna's pastimes, and the demigods are very close to Krishna, as you said, by their piety, many lifetimes of pious activity. And so, although Indra seemingly makes many mistakes, we should still not think Indra to be an ordinary personality. And so that's a very important point. Okay. My dear Lord, Indra said, being puffed up by my false prestige, I thought that you had offended me by not allowing the cowherd men to perform the Indra Yajna. And I thought that you wanted to enjoy the offerings that were arranged for the sacrifice. I thought that in the name of the Govardhan, sacrifice, you were taking my share of the profit, and therefore I mistook your position. Now by your grace, I can understand that you are the Supreme Lord, Personality of Godhead, and that you are transcendental to all the material qualities. Your transcendental position is Vishuddha Sattvam, which is above the platform of the material mode of goodness, and your transcendental abode is beyond the disturbance of the material qualities. Your name, fame, form, quality, and pastimes are all beyond this material nature, and they are never disturbed by the three material modes. Your abode is accessible only for one who undergoes severe austerities and penances and who is completely free from the onslaught of material qualities like passion and ignorance. If someone thinks that when you come within this material world, you accept the modes of material nature, he is mistaken. The webs of material qualities are never able to touch you, and you certainly do not accept them when you are present within this world. Your lordship is never conditioned by the laws of material nature. So Krishna is beyond the modes of material nature. Even though Krishna appears in this world, the material nature is always under his direction. Therefore he says in Bhagavad Gita, Maya Dhyakshena Prakriti Suryate Sacharachana Etunane Nakonteya Jagatvi Parivartate, that the material nature is working under my direction. And therefore one should never think Krishna to be under the modes of nature, One should never think the pure devotee to either be under the modes of material nature. Even we can take Srila Prabhupada's example. Although an external person may see Srila Prabhupada's life and try to measure that, well, he was also subject to the onslaughts of material nature. Actually, the pure devotee is completely transcendental. Even in the final days, Srila Prabhupada was very, very sick, and one doctor came to see Srila Prabhupada. And when he came in, Prabhupada looked at him and said, "How are you? Are you okay?" And he was thinking, "I'm coming here to help." He's asking me, "Am I okay?" So the doctor began to examine Srila Prabhupada and his bodily condition. And he nearly fainted. Because he said, "I have examined his body, I have examined what's going on, and according to the medical state of this individual, he should be crying out in pain." But what was Prabhupada doing? With a dictating machine, he was dictating the purports of the Bhagavatam. So that's amazing. Although a pure devotee seems to be in the material nature, actually they are completely beyond. The suffering of a conditioned soul and the so-called suffering of a pure devotee is completely different. Krishna puts the conditioned soul in suffering so they can be purified. But Krishna puts the pure devotee in a difficult situation so they can be glorified. To show us how to actually live and function in this world and deal with all of these things. So that is incredible. Just like it was Prabhupada's disappearance day recently, and I don't know if you did hear, but in the manor, every single year, on Prabhupada's disappearance day, they show the final lesson. Now, would you ever meet someone in the entire creation who would think to make a movie of them leaving this world? Prabhupada said, "I taught you how to live, and now I'm going to teach you how to die." So Prabhupada was being filmed in the final days. Prabhupada said, "I want to show you how to also leave this world." They say the Bhagavatam teaches you how to live in this world and it shows you how to leave this world. And Prabhupada, as the living Bhagavatam, showed us how to live in this world and leave the world. So, who can do such a thing? To show the world how to leave the world, how to die? Only someone who is completely beyond the modes of nature. So, when we approach God, we become godly. So because Krishna is beyond the modes, when one approaches Krishna, one also goes beyond the modes. Therefore Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, "Devi hi esha gunamai mama maya duratyaya ma megaye prabhadyante maya me tantaram ide." This material nature is practically impossible to overcome. Ma megaye prabhadyante. But if you approach me, if you come to me, if you take shelter of me, mayam etam taranti te, you overcome this material ocean. So when Indra is glorifying Krishna as beyond the modes, it's very, very hope-giving to us. Because all of us are so much affected by the modes of passion and ignorance. But we get the confidence, the hope that if we can surrender to Krishna, then we'll be free from those influences. So Indra is revealing this to us through his prayers.
Did we consider Indra as a Vaishnava?
Do we consider Indra as a Vaishnava? Anyone who is facilitating Krishna's pastimes undoubtedly must be a Vaishnava. Krishna wanted to show his love for the Vrajavasis. He wanted to show the world how he protects his devotees. And Indra played a part in that. Actually, in the Brihad Bhagavatamrita, it's very interesting. The Brihad Bhagavatamrita is a story where Narad Muni is going to find out who's the greatest devotee. So he comes to Indra and he says, Indra, I think you are a great devotee. You prayed to Krishna, you got Krishna's mercy. Indra said, no, I am not a great devotee, but Brahma, he is greater than me. He's directly instructed by Krishna at the beginning of creation. And so Narada Muni goes to Brahma. And Brahma, he begins glorifying, you are the greatest devotee. Brahma begins laughing with his foreheads. And he says, who sent you here? Who told you that I'm the greatest devotee? So he said, Indra sent you here. Brahma said, it's funny that Indra sent you here saying that I'm a greater devotee than him, because we both committed an offense to Krishna. But actually, Indra's offense was pleasing to Krishna, whereas my offense to Krishna was very displeasing. And what did Brahma do in Vrindavan?
He stole the cow.
He stole the cows, and he stole away the cowherd boys, and he put them to sleep for 1 year. And what did Indra do? He sent a Samvarta cloud, and Krishna lifted the Govardhan hill. So why was Brahma's offense very displeasing to Krishna, but Indra's offense, there was some element of it that was very pleasing to Krishna? Does anyone know?
When he lifted the Govardhan hill, everybody is around, but Brahma still is.
Exactly. Brahma's offense meant Krishna was separated from his devotees. But Indra's offense meant everyone came together. It was the first time in Krishna Leela that all the gopas, the gopis, all the cows, everyone was together with Krishna for 7 days, non-stop. He said, actually, Indra, he committed an offense, but he also pleased Krishna. But yes.
So he's beyond the material nature.
Indra is difficult to understand because in one sense, yes, he is beyond the material nature because he's taking part directly in Krishna's pastimes. But in another sense, Indra is showing us what not to do, how you can become influenced. So, Krishna sometimes instructs us through personalities like Indra. Prabhupada gave this example. It's like you can understand it from like Indian culture. So say for example, a boy gets married to a girl. Then what happens is the girl comes to live with the boy. So say for example, the mother is dead. And so say for example, the new girl who has got married and come to the new home, she makes a mistake. So what the mother will do is she won't correct the new daughter directly, because the relationship is still very new. She may become offended. So what the mother does is when her own daughter is there, then she begins to chastise her own daughter, even though her own daughter didn't do anything wrong. But when the new lady who has come in sees the other one getting chastised, then she realizes, oh my God, I should not do this. So this is called instructing the daughter-in-law through the daughter. So similarly, Krishna instructs us through Indra. If we got directly chastised by Krishna, it may be too much to take. So we look at Indra and we see, oh, okay, this is what we should not do. Make sure I don't become proud.
I just wanted to ask, in Gita, Krishna said the nature is understood only by someone who can become severe austerity. But I also heard from devotees that our movement is the movement of ecstasy and the prosperity and not just Gita prosperity. Gita is a severe
Well, Prabhuji, you are a book distributor, and Srila Prabhupada said one day on book distribution is equal to hundreds of years of austerity in the Himalayas.
Wow.
Prabhupada made that point.
Imagine what you are doing.
That's the greatest austerity. Prabhupada said in Kali Yuga, no extra austerity is required. Two main austerities are there for the devotee. You know the two main austerities for devotees? Of course, four rags and all of these things are there, but two main austerities. One austerity, to preach. Because when you preach, so many obstacles come. But that kind of austerity is very pleasing to Krishna. And another other major austerity for devotees in Kali Yuga. Have a guess.
Eat Prasad.
Digest.
Chanting? No.
To get up for Mangala Arati?
Something that can be very, very difficult. But something Prabhupada says, your love for me will be shown by how much you do this.
Yes.
These are the two main austerities in Kali Yuga. Austerities to preach and austerity to cooperate. To cooperate, very difficult. I tell you an amazing story. In his final days, Prabhupada was very sick. So one devotee wrote a letter to Prabhupada and said, Prabhupada, I want to give you my youth. I want to give you my youth, so I'll take your old age, I'll die, I want to give you my youth so you can stay for many, many years more and continue preaching. So he said, I'm willing to die, Prabhupada. He wrote a letter. So Tamal Krishna Maharaj was there and he read the letter to Prabhupada. So Prabhupada, this devotee is willing to die. Prabhupada smiled and he said, this is a very nice sentiment, but your real love for me will be shown by how much you cooperate. So this is where the statement came from. Prabhupada made this statement directly after he read that letter. So now it's an interesting point. What Prabhupada is basically saying is, harder than dying for me, more difficult than to die for me is to cooperate for me. Because when you die, you may kill your physical body. Still it's hard, but harder than that is to kill your ego, to kill your pride, to kill your arrogance and cooperate. That's more difficult. I'll die if you. More difficult than that is to cooperate. So, one devotee used to tell me, Prabhuji, Prabhupada said your love will be shown by how much we cooperate, so you should cooperate with me. I said, no, we cooperate together. This is the austerity in Kali Yuga. Quarrel and hypocrisy, no? So much quarrel, so much fighting. Even in the Krishna Consciousness Movement. I never read it directly, but another devotee told me a Prabhupada story. I never read it, but I'll tell it anyway. Prabhupada once said to a devotee, I perform the mystic act of bringing the spiritual world into the material world because I created many temples and these temples are like the spiritual world. So I brought the spiritual world into the material world. But you are so mystical that you've brought the material world back into the spiritual world. By arguing. So that's very difficult. So those are austerities. Yes.
Prabhu, could you help me understand why Indra, you said that Indra committed a less important offense because he created the opportunity to have all the inhabitants of Vrindavan together with Krishna for 7 days. But from another point of view, he wanted to kill all the devotees, including Krishna. That was his intention. And Brahma, he just wanted to steal away just to test Krishna, like, who is he really? So for me, it's difficult to understand that Brahma created.
Yeah, it's not like what Brahma was saying was that there was some, at least some silver lining that pleased Krishna. But yes, Indra was very, very violent in his intention. And later on, actually, there's a conversation, I can't remember whether it's in 10th canto or in the commentaries, where Krishna actually asks Indra, he says, like, how could you be so violent? And Indra makes a statement that when one is overcome by anger, krodat bhavati sammoha, that when you're overcome by anger, then you become completely deluded. So he makes that point. So yes, it's not that, I mean, Brahma is also speaking in his humility, that, you know, oh no, he is better than me.
It seems to me that Indra, like he was doing his job, right?
Yeah. He was doing his job, but he was ignorant of the fact of...
You know, that sacrifice that Indra sacrificed, it was really important. In the Vedic injunction. So it's really kind of important for society. Right?
Yes.
So then this little boy comes, you know, from somewhere and, you know, decides to disturb everything. So Indra, being one of the structural elements of society.
So it should have been followed, that's your point. Yeah. It should have been followed. It was a yagya which was. Yeah. So this is a. Yeah. So the point here is that there is a higher principle than dharma. The higher principle than dharma is sarva vidhi nisheda shur eta yore vakinkara. Everything should ultimately please Krishna. So if your dharma is no longer pleasing to Krishna, then that dharma is useless. So what Krishna wanted to show is that there is a hierarchy of principles here. Yes, it's part of dharma to do the Indra puja, but higher than dharma is to do what pleases me. And Indra, who obtained all of his power and influence from Krishna, should have known that higher than them respecting me is if Krishna, from whom I've got all of my powers, wants something different, then we go with that.
So what happened? Indra kind of didn't recognize?
Yeah, because he got deluded by his position and he forgot where he was drawing his power from. Because he became proud. And proud blocks your intelligence. There's different kinds of blindness, and one type of blindness is created by pride. Therefore, a proud person can't see. Everyone else can see, but a proud person themselves can't see.
Because it's a very exalted position, you know, that one. Indra's position is very exalted, as you said before.
Yeah.
So it's very, you know, it's very.
But the essential point here is that dharma, therefore I quoted the verse, Save Pumsham Paro Dharmo Yato Bhakti Rato Sajay, ahaituki apradihata yayatma supersedati. What's the paro dharma? What's the supreme dharma? What's the ultimate occupation? Yato bhakti radoksaje, to serve Krishna, adoksaja, to please him. In what way? Ahaituki apratihata, with no motivation and no interruption. But Indra became blinded by that and over. So you can follow dharma and still, if you don't understand what the goal of, therefore what does Krishna say at the end of Gita? See, this is very interesting. In the fourth chapter, Krishna says, dharma sansthapanarthaya sambhavami, I come to this world to establish dharma. And then in the 18th chapter, what does Krishna say? Sarva dharma anvanitya java, give up all dharma. He said, but you came to establish dharma. Dharma saying give up dharma. What does that mean? When Krishna says, I'm coming to establish dharma, he's saying, I'm coming to establish the ultimate dharma, which is love for God. And when he says, abandon all dharma, he's saying there are lesser types of dharma which divert you from love of God. And those things should be given up. Mamekam saranam braja. And just surrender to me. Yes.
As far as I heard, if someone hasn't reached the level of Nishtha, then one must follow rules and regulations of Brahmashram. But after the level of Nishtha, then one has to go to the Parodharma.
Yes. Yeah, so that is absolutely true. That although there is a dharma and bhakti have a relationship. So dharma should always be embraced. However, when the dharma becomes an obstacle to the development of bhakti, then the dharma can be given up. But most of the time, dharma is a support to bhakti. Therefore, we follow varnashram dharma. Why do we follow the varnashram dharma? Mahaprabhu said, Naham vipro, nacha, narapati, napi, vaisha. I'm not a brahmana, I'm not a shakya. I'm just a servant of God. Yet we follow varnashram dharma. I'm a brahmachari. So why are we embracing this dharma? Because it's supportive of bhakti. But the moment when dharma clashes, then we give it up. So yes, Mataji, that's a very good point.
One question. It's something I've been thinking about, and I didn't know who to ask, because anyway, I find it surprising that that in this material world sense gratification has to be given up, and we have to follow the rules of dharma, and we have to be pious, and a demigod is supposed to have all these qualities of piety and birth. In Swadhva, they are indulging in mega sense gratification, and in, apparently, according to human levels, adharmic activities. So, how do we understand that? That what is actually very, condemnable? In order to uplift our consciousness, we should not practice any of these adamic activities. But in Swarga, they are actually indulging in all sorts of, men, women, very illicit connections. Apparently, according to our human
consciousness,
It's not that in the heavenly planets, I don't think I would say it's adharmic. It's just a very high level of enjoyment, but it's not as opposed to Shastra. It's just material enjoyment, and it's ordained by Shastra. Shastra gives a certain level of enjoyment according to the amount of austerity, sacrifice and penance that one has done. Therefore, I don't think we can say there's adharma in heavenly planets, but we can say there's intense sense gratification. But they've earned it because they've done many, many pious activities. But then what does the Bhagavatam say? Kalim Sabha Jayanti Arya Guna Gya Sara Bhagina. The demigods are queuing up. The demigods are queuing up to take birth on the earth planet in Bharat Vaj to be part of the Sankirtan movement. So even all of that intense sense gratification ultimately comes to the point where it frustrates someone and they then look further. So everything has its part to play. So when you engage in sense enjoyment which is unregulated against Dharma, okay, then that kind of sense gratification inflames your material desires more. But when you engage in sense gratification which is according to Shastric principle and allowed, then that regulated sense enjoyment quietens down gradually your enjoying propensity. So even in the heavenly planet, although it seems like they're enjoying very, very, in a very great, grand way, because it's not against Shastra, it is gradually doing its job of, but it takes a very long time. Yeah, so there may be activities like that which are contrary to piety. So we're not saying that there's no one ever does anything adharmic, but we're saying that generally in the heavenly planets they're following Dharma, but there may also be slip-ups even there where these things happen. However, I mean, even understanding, for example, prostitutes in the spiritual world, even in Krishna book is mentioned that there are prostitutes also in Dwarka when Krishna comes in. But it's different. It's different. It's a different culture. It's a different society. It's a different. So we can't equate that to what we see today here, right here in the material world, because there's a different context to that as well. So we have to also be careful when we read Shastra that we don't superimpose our understanding of those things on different realms where there are different civilizations and codes of conduct and cultures that function in different ways. Otherwise we may get a different idea of what it really is.
This is a quite touchy point, yeah, the point she's making and you are addressing. But actually it says that all the enjoyment in Swarga, they don't make any sin because it is more or less like a reward from their pious activities. Like animals, they don't make any karma, so they don't make karma. But they still have maybe a desire to enjoy, which keeps them for progressing spiritual life. So for example, like she said, Indra is sending Menaka, Urvashi, so many apsaras, but to this earth and with rich sages, they associate and make astonishing offsprings, like Parashara Muni had some affair, and so many great yogis and sages. So they are always like on the dharmic principle, although it is not from the earth planet, but it's part of the plan of the Lord. Yeah. They are not they are not ardharmic, like you said. And then you spoke about Dwarka. So one devotee was asking the question, and then I thought, yes, there may be some prostitute in Dwarka, but what are they doing? They are called prostitute because they are public ladies, because all the entertainments, it's only public ladies will do entertainments, like dancing in courts and in front of Krishna, in the city hall of Dwarka. It cannot be married ladies, they will never go in the public dance and do this. But we cannot say that they were engaging in any sexual activities. We think, but it may not be that. It may be that public dancing, they will be dancing Krishna's pastimes. And then they will entertain the courts of the kings, Ugrasena, and all the inhabitants of Dwarka. So we should be careful not to think that the prostitutes in Dwarka, they are engaged in low-class activities. They are actually public ladies dancing the pastimes of Krishna.
Yeah, and just consider Bilvamangal Thakur, who on that night went through the raging ocean. He, you know, climbed all the way up the tree, caught a snake, got pricked by the thorn, somehow came in front of the prostitute. And the most amazing thing is that the prostitute was so powerful, Chintamani, that she looked at him and in one statement she said, if only you had this much determination to get Krishna. So imagine how Krishna conscious she must have been. It's inconceivable. It's inconceivable.
The prostitute becomes a guru.
Yeah.
The prostitute becomes a guru.
The prostitute becomes a guru. Mm-hmm. So, when we think, we may see the word prostitute, but it's a completely different thing. So, we may not... And it's amazing to think Gopaswamipu was just talking about simplicity and how Vaishnava should be so simple. And just think how simple Bilvamangal Thakur is, that after he was advised by the prostitute in this way, then in his books, everywhere, openly he says, I offer my respectful obeisances, and openly tells everyone it was the prostitute.
Yeah.
He tells the whole world. He tells the whole world, I was going to a prostitute. Just see how simple. Not trying to, like, if we would have such a background, we may, like, try to cover it up, you know? Delete all the articles on the internet. Like, make sure no one finds out about it. Bilvamangal Thakur was so simple. This is who I am. I was going to a prostitute. And she made me a devotee. That kind of simplicity, where one is not having any duplicity, holding anything back, hiding anything, that is the Vaishnava. So anyway, that's a separate point. But so what quality was Chintamani in her spirituality that she had such potency? Somehow, circumstantially, for some reason which we're not aware of, she ended up as a prostitute. We can understand such things, but look where her consciousness was. So, as you mentioned with the
dwarves. It's also a necessity. I think Srila Prabhupada also underlined the fact that prostitutes are actually a necessity in society. So, you know, they have a job.
Yeah, so
maybe we are seeing this like a spiritualist. Maybe we are seeing this, you know, in a too moral of a light.
Yeah.
You know, and that, you know, this, especially Chintamani, she goes, you know, above Dharma in that sense.
Yeah. I don't remember this story. Maybe someone remembers it, but there's this account of one wife who her husband wanted to enjoy with some lady.
She was so chaste to her husband. She was so chaste to the husband. She went to the prostitute work for the prostitute to raise the money that she could enjoy the prostitute. Can you believe it? Can you believe it?
No.
Can you believe it? She wanted to serve us so perfectly. She was so shade. She went to the prostitute. She said, my husband wants to enjoy with you, but I need money because we don't have enough money. So I will serve you, I will get some money, I will give the money to my husband, he will be able to enjoy with you. But this is an amazing story. Amazing story.
It's incredible.
Amazing story. And this lady was so chaste that the husband was supposed to die the next day. Because of her chastity, the sun never rose.
The
sun
never rose.
Because the man was cursed. He was cursed to die the next day. But because of the day, his wife, so say, said, my husband will never die because the sun will never rise. And the Brahma was disturbed. Everybody was disturbed because in fact. By the chastity, she stopped the sun, all the demigods to act. And it's an amazing story. I wrote it on my book. When I saw that, I write stories on my notebook. You know, I write all these things because it's really amazing. And after
it's inconceivable if you would tell someone such a story today. They just
can't. By the power of the chastity of the lady, controlling the demigod. And after one she tried to enjoy the prostitute, she became Chintamani with Viva Mangala. Exactly the same thing. Yeah. She said, what are you doing? Your wife is so shaste. Why are you coming to me? Are you crazy? Go back to your wife. Amazing story. As a wife, as a prostitute comes to Guru.
She made him eat, and she gave him two plates. One, a golden plate, and one iron plate. And he said, why do you give me two plates? So you test both plates. And then he said, but it has the same taste. So this is, why do you come to me? It will be the same taste with me or with your wife? Why do you want to come to me?
I mean, it's mentioned that he was 7 days, right, without, I think, I don't remember also any, if someone knows they can say, but my understanding was that after 7 days he had exhausted all his powers, all his potency, there was nothing more. And he realized, I have nothing more, now. There's nothing more to do. I have exhausted all of my... So sometimes it's like that. Therefore, Kunti Maharani says, Janmeshwari Ashruta Shri Bire Dhamana Madhapuman Nirvar Hatya Vidatum Vetvamakim Chanagocharam. So she says, like, only when you are exhausted can you approach Krishna with sincere feeling. So, Indra exhausted everything. He exhausted everything. And then the sincerity came. So I guess in one sense we are just like that Indra, no? Like we're trying so many things. We still have a few more tricks up our sleeve to try to enjoy in the world. But once you've run out of all the tricks, when you've run out of all the options, you've run out of all your hopes, then you can come to Krishna and say, Krishna is only nothing. You know, I tried everything. So until you come to that point, Kunti Maharani says, you have to become a kinchan, completely exhausted.
There's a last story about, you know, the prostitute and the brahmana.
Liquid beef?
No. The prostitute was in business, but she was watching on the other side of the road, the Brahmin. As a Brahmin, the Brahman, he was washing the prostitute. So it was watching like this. So suppose in truth, she was thinking, "Oh my God, if I could be a Brahmana, you know." And she, at the time of death, she took a better birth. Mm-hmm. But the Brahmin, when he died, the Bhagavata came to him. It was said, "Well, maybe you are Brahmin, but you were meditating on the positive." So the mind is supposed to, we can understand that the Shantamani also, she was doing that, but her mind, maybe she was meditating on Krishna. That's why she spoke to Vivananda Thakur like this. Krishna conscious prostitute. Krishna conscious prostitute.
Yeah, I mean, even that story Prabhupada tells of liquid beauty, no? That's she's a prostitute also, no?
Yeah.
No, she's not a prostitute. No.
She's a queen or
she's a
princess.
Okay.
Princess.
Okay.
Krishna conscious prostitute in one sense. You can understand that.
And there is this one with the Brahmin in the forest. Bhagavad Gita, I don't know the name.
24 gurus?
Yes.
No, she has no name.
She has a name. Yeah.
Pingala?
Pingala.
Yeah, that's a good example. Hare Krishna,
Gantaraj, Bhagavad Gita.